Parshas Lech Lecha introduces the mitzvah of Bris Milah. As the pasuk states, "Yimol Yimol Yilid Beischol Meknas Kaspecha Vahisav Risibiv Sachem Lebris Olam." You should surely circumcise the sons of your household and your slaves, and my bris will be inscribed in you forever. So from this pasuk, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Chav Zayin of an Aleph quotes the position of Rabbi Yochanan, who derives from the words "Yimol Yimol" that Akum non-Jews are disqualified from performing Milas Yisrael. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's the way that we're asking, non-Jews are not going to be able to perform a bris milah for a milas Yisrael. The truth is that the Gemara there cites a debate amongst the Tanaim whether that is actually the case, whether Akum are disqualified from performing milah. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is machmir, as we are lehalacha, but Rabbi Yehuda allows Akum to perform milah. But even though Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that Akum are allowed to perform milah, Rabbi Yehuda disqualifies a kusi from performing milah, and that's because of the concern that when a kusi does a milah, he's going to do it the shame hard reason. He's going to do it with the intention of circumcising for a different god, for the shame hard reason. So the basis for Rabbi Yehuda's restriction of kusim is the requirement of milah lishma. Rabbi Yehuda requires that every milah be done lishma, and since a kusi is going to do the milah l'shem ha-grizim and not l'shem Hashem, so therefore Rabbi Yehuda disqualifies a kusi from performing a milah, even though, again, Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that Akum may perform a milah. How does Rabbi Yehuda know that there is a requirement of milah l'shma? So he derives this from the juxtaposition of the words l'Hashem himol in Parshas Bo in the context of Korban Pesach. So from that juxtaposition, the smichos of l'Hashem himol, we derive, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that we require milah l'shma. So what emerges from this Gemara, and specific from the position of Rabbi Yehuda, is that although according to Rabbi Yehuda, milah has to be lishma, and therefore a kusi who does milah l'shem ha-grizim is going to be pasul l'milah, nonetheless, an akum is kosher l'milah, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Tosfos and Avodah Zarah there in Chav Zayin of an Aleph, and also in Maseches Zvachim and Daf Beis and Beis, asks a very interesting and powerful question. Tosfos says, so if milah requires lishma, as we established according to Rabbi Yehuda, and we also know that a get must be written lishma, because the Torah says v'chasav la lishma. So then why is it that a non-Jew is going to be kosher to do milah according to Rabbi Yehuda, but as the Gemara establishes on Maseches Gittin, a non-Jew is not allowed to write a get. A non-Jew is disqualified from writing a get because a get needs to be lishma, and we assume that a non-Jew is not going to be able to satisfy the requirement of lishma. So Tosfos basically here is posing an apparent contradiction. We have the requirement of lishma in two contexts. Number one, in milah, and number two, when it comes to the writing of gittin. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that while a non-Jew is allowed to do a milah, apparently he can satisfy the requirement of lishma for milah, he's going to be possible for the writing of a get. So how do we get around that apparent contradiction? Tosfos explains that the reasoning, the distinction here between milah and gittin really revolves around the concept of stama lishma. Tosfos says that milah is stama lishma, while get is not stama lishma. What does stama lishma mean? What is this concept? So stama lishma refers to the idea that something can be lishma, it can be designated for a certain purpose, even without the intention of lishma, even without its purpose being clarified and explicated. So explains Tosfos that a milah is stama lishma. When a milah is performed, so just its neutral status is going to be lishma, even without lishma being clarified. Whereas a get is not stama lishma. Why is a get not stama lishma? Because we can't say about any specific woman that she is omedes legerushin. We can't say about one woman that she's designated or that she stands to be divorced. We have to know The only way for a woman to be designated for that status is to write the get lishma, l'shem dat isha. But until that point, she doesn't stand to be divorced. Whereas when it comes to milah, so we have the concept of stama lishma, that every milah, even in its neutral state and its neutral status, is really designated for the purpose of mitzvahs, milah, and l'shem Hashem. So that's Tosfos's distinction, and that explains why, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a non-Jew is going to be able to perform milah, but not going to be able to write a get. Because when a non-Jew does a milah, so even if he's not thinking l'shem Hashem, even if he doesn't have l'shma in mind, nonetheless, stama l'shma kicks in, and stama l'shma carries the milah all the way through. Whereas when it comes to Gittin, where we need a positive expression of the Shema, so there, a non-Jew is not going to be able to write the get, because we assume that Akum Adaita Denafshei Ovid, that a non-Jew is going to be doing this on his own terms, he's not having the correct intention in mind, and he's not going to be writing the get for the sake of the woman at hand. So that's the position of Tosos. So Tosos here assumes that the concept of Stama Lishma is relevant in the world of Mila. Tosos assumes that Stama Lishma can be applied to Bris Mila. The Karen Ora, however, in his commentary in Zvachim on Beis and Beis, actually argues with this Tosos. He says that according to his understanding, the concept of Stama Lishma should be limited to the realm of Korbanos, to the world of Kudshim. But it cannot apply to other mitzvos, and it cannot apply to the mitzvah of Mila. So what we have here is a debate between Tosfos and the Karen Ora. According to Tosfos, the concept of Stama Lishma, that something in a neutral state has the status of Lishma, so Tosfos applies that to Mila, whereas the Karen Ora says that it's limited to the world of Kachim. It only applies to the world of Kachim. So what's the root of the dispute between Tosfos and the Karen Ora? Just to explain a bit further what the Karen Ora has in mind, so the Gemara in Zvachim and Daf Beis Amid Beis establishes that all Kachim are Stama Lishma. What does that mean? So there's a requirement to do the avodos of Kachim Lishma. When you shecht, when a korban is shechted in order to then be brought to the mizbeach, that korban has to be shechted lishma. It has to be shechted for the purpose of that korban. So if you have a korban ola, it has to be shechted l'shem ola. If you have a korban shlamim, it has to be shechted l'shem shlamim. And so too for the other three avodos, for kabbalah, holacha, and zrika. So the Gemara in Zvachim on Beis Medes explains that even if the intention of Lishma is not clarified, even if the person who's doing the Avodah, the Kohen, who's doing the Zrika, doesn't have Lishma in mind, so nonetheless, Stama Lishma, as long as it was just neutral, then that Korban's going to be Kasher, because the neutral state of the Korban is for it to be Lishma. So says the Karen Ora, that's true for the realm of Korbanos, but we cannot extend that concept of Stama Lishma outside of the realm of Korbanos to other mitzvos, whereas Tosos, as we've explained, it does extend it to the world of Bris Mila. And what we would like to know is, what is the root of the dispute? What's the Nekudas HaMachlokas between Tosfos and the Karen Ora? So that's question number one in our analysis today. Question number two is, what exactly is the nature of this principle of Stama Lishma? How does it work that without a clear explication of Lishma, nonetheless, we assume the status of Lishma? And number three, we're going to want to know the scope of the application of Stama Lishma. To what cases does it apply, and to what cases does it not apply? So let's begin with the nature of Stama Lishma. Here we really can pose the following chakira that many achronim pose themselves. So there are basically two ways of viewing Stama Lishma, viewing this principle that something in its neutral state is considered Lishma. The first one is what we would call an umdina. An umdina means that we assume that the intent of the actor was Lishma, even though we don't know definitively that his intention was Lishma. He didn't clarify his intention. He didn't say, I am doing this circumcision l'shem mitzvas milah or l'shem Hashem. He didn't say that I am shechting this korban l'shem ola or l'shem shlamim. But nonetheless, we assume that that was his intent. Even though he didn't clarify it, nonetheless, we assume that that was his intent. That's what's called an umdina. So that's one way of viewing Stama Lishma, that in the neutral state, we assume that Lishma was there, even though it wasn't clarified. But there is a whole other way of explaining the principle of Stama Lishma, and that is what's called in more Lashon terms a din b'chata. So what that means is that we have a certain object in question, a certain object at hand, and we assume, and it's designated for a certain purpose. And since it's designated for that purpose, so therefore, as long as that purpose is not interfered with, so that purpose continues, that status of designation continues. So So from that perspective, the neutral state is lishma because the designation of this object is lishma. So let's explain that in the world of kodshim, the world of korbanos. When a person is makdish, a korban, when he sets aside a korban to be given as a korban ola or a korban shlamim, immediately what sets in that korban is what's called a shame ola or a shame shlamim. The status of ola inheres in the korban from the time of its hakdasha. And that being the case, so this animal is now designated for a certain purpose. It has a certain destiny. The ola is now designated for the purpose of being sacrificed as a korban ola. The shlamim is now designated for the purpose of being sacrificed as a shlamim. So that being the case, since this korban has a certain status that inheres within it, so therefore we can say that stama lishma. Even without any clarification of purpose on the part of the Ovid, meaning when someone comes to shech this korban, even when he slaughters it without any intention to do that, l'shem ola or l'shem shlamim, nonetheless, because there is a certain status that inheres within the korban, therefore it's considered lishma on its own. It's a more natural type of lishma. The lishma stems from the status of the korban as opposed to from the assumed intent of the actor. So those are two different ways of explaining the principle of stama lishma. Is stama lishma in umdina, it's an assumption of the intent of the actor, or is it a din b'cheftza? It's carried from the designation of the object at hand. So now that we have these two different ways of explaining stama lishma, let's try to bring that back to explain the machlokas between Tosos and the Karen Oda. Namely, whether the principle of stama lishma is relevant, is applicable to the world of Mila. The Karen Oda was of the opinion that stama lishma has to be limited to the realm of Kadri. It can't apply to Bris Mila. Why would the Karen Oda say such a thing? So seemingly what the Karen Oda has in mind is that stama lishma, really the mechanism of stama lishma, the nature of stama lishma, is that it's a din b'cheftza. It's really rooted in the idea that the object at hand has a certain designation for a certain purpose. But what the Karen Oda has in mind is that that purpose has to come from somewhere. In the world of Kadshim, we know that that designation comes from the time of the Hakdasha, where you set aside the Korban as an Ola or as a Shlamim. But when it comes to Bris Mila or any other mitzvah, there is no such parallel to Hakdasha. There is no such parallel to setting aside for a certain purpose. In the world of Mila, a baby boy comes into the world, and then there's a mitzvah on the eighth day to give him a circumcise him. But it's not as if the baby is set aside for the mitzvah of Mila. So says the Karen Ora that because Stama Lishma is rooted in the setting aside for a designated purpose, therefore we have to limit it to the world of Kachim, and we cannot extend it to the world of Bris Mila. Tosfos, on the other hand, may argue that Stama Lishma is actually about Umdana. It's about assumption of the intent of the actor. So in the case of Kachim, in the case of Shechting a Korban Shlamim, so really there's a requirement that the Shechita be done for the purpose of Shlamim. And even if the person who's Shechting the Shlamim doesn't have that intent, doesn't clarify that intent, we assume that he had that intent. After all, why else would he be Shechting this Korban, if not for the purpose of eventually bringing it as a Shlamim? And likewise, we can apply that type of svara, this umdina, to the world of Mila. And Tosos would say that when a non-Jew does a Mila, so Mistama, he's doing it for the purpose of the Mila Sisrael that he's doing before him. Well, after all, why else would he be doing this Bris Mila? So Stama Lishma is basically just the argument that we can assume the intention of the actor. And since it's about assumption of intention, it's not going to be limited to the world of Kachin, but rather it will apply whenever we can reasonably apply that assumption. Tosfos says that we can reasonably apply that assumption to the case of Bris Mila. So that might be the Nekuda Samachlokas between Tosfos and the Karen Ora, whether the principle of Stama Lishma is about an Umdana, that would be the position of Tosfos, or whether it's a Din Bechefta, it's about the designation of the object at hand for a certain purpose, that would be the viewpoint of the Karen Ora. The truth is that we might be able to salvage Tosfos' application of Stama Lishma to the world of Bilas Yisrael, even from the perspective that Stama Lishma is a din b'chefta, is really a designation for a certain purpose. The Turei Eben, in his commentary in Rosh Hashanah, Chav Tesem and Aleph, argues that Stama Lishma applies to Bris Mila because The mitzvah of Bris Milah is limited to a specific person. When Reuven is born, so the only way to fulfill the mitzvah of Milah on Reuven is by circumcising Reuven. You can't circumcise Shimon and thereby fulfill the mitzvah of Milah on Reuven. Every mitzvah of Milah is limited and circumscribed to the person at hand. So seemingly what the Turei Evan has in mind here is that the mitzvah of Bris Milah really has some intimate connection with the, so to speak, the chefta, meaning the person who's involved in this mitzvah. And maybe what the Turei Evan has in mind is that being the case, so then really this person is set aside, so to speak, for the mitzvah of Milah, because the mitzvah of Milah, his mitzvah of Milah cannot be done in any other way. It can only be done via his circumcision. It can't be done on any other person. So that being the case, we might actually apply the idea that Stama Lashma is a din b'cheftza, it's designated for a certain purpose, even in the case of Bris Milah. What nafkamina do we have to this question of Stama Lashma and whether it's an uvna or a din b'cheftza? So the first one comes up with regard to mitzvos tzrichos kavana. The Minchas Chinuch, in his commentary on mitzvos milah and parashas lech lecha, cites the position of the Turei Evan that we just explained, that the Turei Evan says that that stama lishma applies to the world of bris milah because milah is designated for a certain person. It cannot be done. You can't fulfill the milah for Reuven by doing a milah for Shimon. And the Minchas Chinuch uses that Turei Evan in order to explain another question. The Minchas Chinuch explains that Chere, Shota, V'Katan are all fundamentally Ksherim for a Milah. And the Minchas Chinuch is bothered by why should that be the case? Since after all, what about according to the Manda Amar, Mitzvos Tzrichos Kavana? And Chere, Shota, V'Katan are not able to achieve the Kavana necessary for Mitzvos Tzrichos Kavana. So why should Chere, Shota, V'Katan be Kasher for a Milah if they cannot have the kavana that's necessary to fulfill the mitzvah? So the Minchas Chinuch explains, quoting the Turei Evan, that whenever you have the designation form of stama lishma, whenever you have a stama lishma that's a din b'chefta, so then there's no longer a requirement for kavana, even according to the opinion that mitzvah tzrichos kavana. And seemingly the explanation of that is that when you have stama lishma, so then all the intention, all the designation and purpose of this mitzvah is all already embedded within the chefta. It's already embedded within the object at hand, or in the case of Milah, within the person in that at play. So therefore, you don't need any. There's no longer any need for kavana, because the entire concept of kavana is already taken care of by the designation of this object or this person for the mitzvah in question. So the Minchas Chinuch explains that according to the Turei Evan, when you have the Stama Lashma of the designation form, that's a Din Bechefta, whether that be in the world of Kachim or whether that be in the world of Bris Milah, so then you're not going to need Kavana, even according to the Mando Amar Mitzvos Tzrichos Kavana. There's another very interesting question, which is the removability of Lashma. Can Stama Lashma be uprooted? If a neutral state of a certain object is Lashma, can that be uprooted? So if Stama Lashma is an umvina, if it's really based on just our assessment of a person's intention, then certainly it can be uprooted. The way it can be uprooted is if the actor clarifies that his intention is not Lashma, that it's Shalom Lashma. So if he says Shalom Lashma when he's shechting the korban, so then we can no longer assume that his intent is Lashma, because he already told us black on white that his intention is not Lashma. However, if Stama Lashma is a din b'cheftza, if it's something that inheres as a status in the object at hand, then maybe even when someone has the intention shalom lishma, that's not going to uproot the status of stama lishma that inheres, that's embedded within the korban or within the object that's in question. That's actually the approach that the Brisker Rav takes to stama lishma in the world of korban. The Brisker Rav assumes that stama lishma cannot be uprooted because it is firmly embedded within the korban from the time of the hakdasha, from the time that the korban is set aside. Just to end off on one note of Hamachshava, so we see here some overlap between the world of Bris Mila and the world of Kachim and Korbanos. After all, Tosos applies Stama Lishma both to Mila and Korbanos. The Ture Evin assumes that Stama Lishma is applied only to the world of Korbanos and to Bris Mila. What's this connection between Korbanos, Kachim, and Bris Mila? We see this even further where the Ture in Yoredeh, Reish Lamed Hei, explains that a father should stand next to the Mohel if someone else, if the father appoints a Mohel to circumcise his son, so he should stand next to the Mohel. Why should he stand next to him? Because just as one accompanies his Korban when he brings it to the Beis HaMikdash to be sacrificed, so too the father should stand next to the Mohel while the Mohel does the circumcision of the father's son. And seemingly what the Torah has in mind is that the Bris Mila here is akin to, it's parallel to, Hakravas HaKorban and the Beis HaMikdash. So what's the idea, what's the parallel between Bris Mila and Hakravas Korbanos? So seemingly, the idea here is that Mila signifies man's unequivocal dedication and submission to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's what reminds man of his purpose in this world. So just as sacrificing a Korban is also an unequivocal submission to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, putting something on the Mizbeach and thereby submitting himself through the Korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to Mila, embedded and marked within a person, is that unequivocal dedication and submission to the Ribono Shel Olam. And perhaps from this perspective, so the Chiddush of the Turei Evin, that a person can be considered Stama Lishma with regard to Bris Mila, that he set aside for the purpose of Bris Mila, can be better understood, because when a Jew comes into the world, he set aside for the purpose of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wish everyone a great rest of the week.